Hal Shurtleff. The show is heard on WBCQ, The Planet, every Monday and Thursday evenings at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among all things, runs a week-long family camp. And this year's camp, I should say next year's camp, will be in Plainfield, New Hampshire, at the Singing Hills Christian Camp and Conference Center, July 19th to the 24th. So check our website for more information. You can also hear this show on our Podomatic page, podomatic.com, and on our YouTube channel. Well, we have a guest on the line, and that would be Dr. Jane Orient of the Doctors for Disaster Preparedness. How are you doing, Jane?
Well, good morning, Hal. It's such an honor to be with you and with the Camp Constitution people.
Well, I don't think we've actually met, but we have a lot of common friends, and that would include the good Dr. Willie Soon and Lord Christopher Monckton, and I'm sure many others that attend your conference. Tell us a little bit about your organization, and then I want to get into your excellent article you wrote about Little Greta, the climate
Doctors for Disaster Preparedness was founded back in around 1983, and mainly to promote civil defense. That was at the time of the nuclear freeze movement and a lot of hysteria about the end of the world coming from a nuclear attack or from nuclear winter, along with an effort to deny Americans any means of preparation or defense. And there was a lot of false information about radiation. And so we were to provide accurate information to Americans about this threat. But now that that's kind of fallen out of public consciousness, although in reality we have more nuclear weapons in the world in different places than we did before, the way to destroy America now is through false hypotheses about, you know, the final extinction from global warming or climate change or climate crisis or climate emergency. They kind of keep moving the goalposts on that.
It's always interesting, though. There's always these doomsdayers, either nuclear annihilation, we must unilaterally disarm and just let the Soviets prevail, and that was back in the 70s and 80s. Now the world's coming to an end because of this evil, wicked gas called carbon dioxide, CO2, as Willie Soon calls it, the satanic gas. Your organization has done a lot to refute these claims, and you host an annual convention?
Yes, we have an annual meeting that in the summertime at different places. We try very hard not to compete with Camp Constitution.
I appreciate that.
Willie Soon has spoken at our meetings for years, for decades actually. Always gives a wonderful presentation about something new and fresh, new data, excellent science. And this is the main thing that we do now, is to try to disseminate the facts about the real threats in the world and what we need to do to protect ourselves. And certainly we do not need to destroy our energy economy.
Now, Dr. Arthur Robinson is also involved in your group, correct?
Yes, he's one of our directors. And he speaks
and
every year.
He's not a medical doctor, is he?
No, he is a PhD in chemistry. He is a world-class biochemist who is doing some really remarkable research in human metabolism.
And he took over from Peter, the late, great Dr. Peter Beckman.
He took over Access to Energy from Peter Beckman, yes.
Peter Beckman, yes. Now, I saw your recent posting, and you were refuting a lot of the claims made by people like Greta. And my opinion about little Greta is that she's being, I think she's a victim of child abuse. I think that she actually bought into the scary scenarios that we have less than, well, it was 12 years back 6 months ago when AOC said that. So we have probably about 11 and a half years left. And she actually, unless she's acting, unless it's just one big act, which I'm not sure, but she believes that the world's coming to an end. And although when she gave her speech at the UN, she said future generations, well, there really won't be any if that's true, that we're going to be done away within 11 and a half years. But just give us sort of an overview of your article and then some of the points made there that are just ridiculous, that refute this ridiculous notion.
Well, I think that poor Greta is a sick person. She is now turned 17. At age 11, she nearly starved to death because of anorexia. She has a number of psychiatric diagnoses, like Asperger's syndrome, that she is now trying to say that gives her superpowers, and has told her mother that she can actually see carbon dioxide molecules and the evil effects that they're having on the world.
Did she walk on water? Has she been able to do that yet?
Well, she sailed on water with
a very
racing yacht underneath her.
Well, I understand that a couple of the crew members actually had to fly from Sweden to New York to actually pilot the ship back. So we really didn't save any CO2s from that little public relations stunt.
No, we didn't. I think it was just theater. It was kind of symbolic, a demonstration of what we all need to do. We all need to sacrifice and give up our comfortable way of living to save this planet, or else we're all going to die. I mean, whoever taught her that, I think she's been immersed in this type of teaching throughout her life, and I guess people with her neurologic condition tend to be obsessed and to focus on things very narrowly and not be open to other impressions.
And I think her parents are of the same, I guess, I don't know if they're socialist. And it's sad, though, because we're going to have some of our campers. We've started something called the Agenda 21 Challenge, launched by Debbie Bacigalupi, who I'm sure you probably know. She may have been at your events. And they're actually writing a letter, an open letter to Greta, inviting her to come to our camp, where she'll find loving adults, children that are concerned about our future but have an optimistic outlook. And I think they have the optimistic outlook because they have what maybe we call a Judeo-Christian worldview, as opposed to, I don't know if Greta's an atheist or what her background is, but it's not a really hopeful worldview.
No, it's a view of panic and despair. She doesn't want people to be optimistic. She wants them to be as frightened as she is and as depressed about the future. I mean, obviously this girl really needs love and support, and I think that now she is really being captured by people who are using her as a tool for their own political agenda.
Yeah, the sad thing, you know, the Bible talks, so Jesus talked about when you cause a little one to sin, it's worse than you're better off hanging a millstone around your neck and going to the sea. And I think that's what's happening. These young children are being abused all over the world at these public schools, some private schools that are teaching them this worldview that because of the free market or capitalism, because of people who have single-family homes that have cars or SUVs, or take vacations and buy airline tickets. All of this is a horrible, horrible thing. And then we have to reduce our standard of living. But sadly, I don't see most of these people who are screaming from the housetops about this actually doing anything to change their lifestyle. Is that correct?
Well, you don't see them doing much. There's hypocrisy all over the place. And they're utterly dependent on the technological world that we have. I mean, Greta is being supported by billionaires. That voyage across the Atlantic was by no means cheap. That yacht is a multi-million-dollar yacht. And they're out there blaming their parents for everything, calling, you know, their parents are evil, they've destroyed their future. Even though they've received everything from their parents, most of them don't know how to do anything on their own to sustain their own life. And what they're demanding their parents to do, you know, reduce the world to poverty, is just utter nonsense.
I think that if we were to follow the game plan or the policies of this Green New Deal, which is nothing more than the total fruition of Agenda 21, that we wouldn't be, there'd be mass starvation. They would be, people would be freezing to death. They might be dying of heat stroke in the summertime. I interviewed Dr. Tony Heller about 6 months ago, and he's sort of a climate historian, among other things. And he talked about heat waves back in the 1930s that killed thousands of people, mainly in, you know, inner cities where air condition was unavailable. I guess it was a relatively new concept back then as well. He said, if that happened today, there would be widespread panic.
Oh, absolutely, there would. And
I remember reading an essay. Oh, God, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
People somehow believe what the Green New Deal proponents are saying, that it's going to create many, many jobs. The economy is going to thrive because we'll get all of this energy from clean, renewable sources, and it's dirt cheap, like the wind and the sun are free. But they completely forget what it takes to make those solar panels or those wind turbines, the devastating effect they have on the environment, the utter impossibility that these unreliable sources can produce anything like the energy that we need. I think maybe we invested $2 trillion in subsidizing these things, and they still produce less than 2% of the world's energy. I mean, you can say, well, they're growing by leaps and bounds, but, you know, going from nothing to slightly less than nothing, maybe 100% increase, but it still doesn't amount to anything.
Well, what I observed is that if the free market, if there's a need for something, the free market, where it does exist, doesn't exist in too many places, unfortunately, will meet that need. If solar panels were viable things to use, there'd be no need for government subsidies. If wind turbines were the thing we need to use, the free market would figure out a way to make it available, and as time went on, much more cheaper. But they have to be heavily subsidized by governments at all levels, local, federal, state levels. And you look at the environmental consequences of wind turbines and these solar panels. You know, in Massachusetts, you get on the what we call the Massachusetts Turnpike, Route 90, which goes up to Washington State. And you used to see some little fields as you're driving, and now you're seeing these so-called solar farms. I don't know if they have solar panel seeds, they start and they grow on their own, but they call them farms. And what used to be a nice field is now covered with solar panels. And these solar panels use rare earth materials. It's quite a drain on the environment to produce these things. And I understand that they actually toxins come off of them as it rains and as they break down. Is that correct?
Oh, certainly it is, and there's going to be a big toxic waste disposal problem. And if Greta's concerned about her childhood being stolen from her, she has no concern for the little children in Africa who are having to mine the cobalt to supply all our electronic devices and maybe the batteries for the backup to these solar farms. You know, they live in utter poverty in very dangerous conditions. Some of them are killed by the dangerous conditions in the mine, but their health is suffering in the long term, even if they manage to survive cave-ins and things like that. No concern whatsoever for these children.
I know I had the pleasure of meeting the late Roy Innes of the Congress for Racial Equality at a Heartland Institute conference. And he did a lot with that. You know, he went to sub-Saharan Africa. He worked with a Dr. Paul Reeder, I believe, from France. And they were able to get I forget what country it was, but they were able to repeal their ban on that insecticide there that was very helpful. And what's the name of that insecticide that was
DDT.
Banned? DDT, thank you. Yeah, Rachel Carson's book in the early 60s, Silent Spring. But when they banned it, there were thousands of people, if not millions of people, getting various diseases and dying. And as Dr. Reeder explained and Roy Innes explained, that this stuff wasn't sprayed on the open fields and the jungles. It was sprayed around the homes. And he said, you know, obviously, there was a lot of exaggeration about the ill effects of this. But he gave a speech at that event, and he said, sub-Saharan Africa needs energy. And they showed a satellite of the world, and it showed even today, they used to refer to it as the dark continent, and for good reason, because once you get a little bit south of the equator, it's still dark. It's not a lot of energy being produced. And what's the average life expectancy in many of these third world countries? Is it under 40 years of age?
Well, I think it's getting a little better now, but still it is much diminished.
So you can actually make the case that deny these countries this energy is almost a form of racism. You know, we don't want you to survive and thrive. We want you to have grinding poverty. I think it was.
Well, maybe you can call it genocide, considering all the people who died of malaria, especially babies in Africa dying of malaria, for fake concern about birds. A lot of the DDT evidence was fabricated or non-existent. But nobody cares about the fact that there may be two or three billion fewer birds now than there were before we started erecting all of these bird killers or bird shredders called wind turbines.
Yeah, well, I understand that they're quite devastating to, especially bats, and bats are very helpful. They control mosquitoes. And what's interesting, too, is the average wind turbine, it's a couple of, what is it, 3.5 kilowatt. They're about $1 million to $2 million to build. They require vast amounts of concrete and steel. You have to clear cut up the hill. Then you have to have transmission lines down the hill. They can catch fire pretty easy, and you can't just get a garden hose and put the fire out. Is that correct? I mean, there's no way to really put a fire out one of these turbines that's maybe 60 feet high.
Well, no, not with the oil fires that are caused by them, and they can hurl their blades a long distance. Maybe especially if they're covered with ice, they can fall off. It's then to decommission them, they cost almost $500,000, and that's not a complete decommissioning. They only get rid of the effects down to about 4 feet, and the concrete goes down to about 15 feet, and then there are cables and other things that are under the earth. So restoring the earth to its previous state will probably be unaffordable, if not impossible.
So they just destroy the environment without actually having a positive impact. And even if they were running at full efficiency, which is impossible, they kind of wear out after so many years too, don't they? By the time they pay for themselves, they're already broken.
Well, maybe they never do pay for themselves. The lifespan is maybe 15, maybe 20 years, probably not as long as was originally estimated. And then once they're broken down, it's very difficult or impossible to recycle many of the components, so they're being buried in huge landfills.
It's incredible how it's almost as if most of these people, and I think it's important to have a concern for the environment. I know your organization does. I think responsible people do, but they just they latch on to these false premises, and they latch on to these notions that things of this solar panels and wind turbines are going to be in electric cars are going to be the wave of the future. Talk a little bit about these electric cars and how inefficient they are.
Well, they certainly have a short range, and although Joe Biden has promised to install 500,000 charging stations, can you imagine what's going to happen if somebody runs out of charge in the middle of a busy freeway? Maybe they'll have to send out a diesel truck with a diesel generator on it to rescue the people. But then caught in a snowstorm or trying to evacuate from a hurricane, how would that work with something that has such a short range? And then I just read on Twitter this morning about someone who paid around $50,000 for a new electric car. A new battery is going to cost him $33,000, and the value of the car is now down to $12,000. So to think we're going to replace millions of gasoline-fueled cars with these electric cars in a few years is total fantasy. the world probably does not have the manufacturing capacity to make that many batteries in any event.
And those batteries aren't the little batteries we might put in, our radios or our appliances. We're talking about these things that, what, they weigh about 500 or 600 pounds or something ridiculous like that.
They're extremely heavy, and they can catch fire. There's been examples of these Tesla cars just catching fire.
You know, I was up in rural New Hampshire. I was coming back from an event last year. The old saying, a picture's worth a thousand words. But here was a tow truck towing a electric car. Probably the person drove a little too far from the city and had no means of recharging. And doesn't it take about 4 or 5 hours to fully recharge one of these cars?
I guess it's getting a shorter time than it used to be. I guess people will plan to have it in their garage and recharge them overnight so that they can commute to work the next day. But I don't think I can get from Tucson to Phoenix in the best of these cars.
And then you put your air conditioning on and forget it, right? You just take it.
Oh, yeah, and plus in cold weather, it just charges a whole lot faster than it's supposed to. So the range that you're counting on may be vanishing before your very eyes while you're stuck out at the point of no return between two charging stations.
It's incredible. And then these charging stations, I do see some of these available for free, if you have a – and they give preferential parking spots for those with electric cars, as if the people that drive cars that use gasoline are somehow second-class citizens. And usually, almost every time I've seen one of these charging stations in these parking lots, there's nobody there, no vehicle using them. But I guess we feel warm and fuzzy, as the late Dr. Dixie Lee Reese, she used to talk about recycling. She says, it doesn't really have much of an impact. In most cases, negative, but we feel warm and fuzzy because we think we're doing something for the environment. It's like these bike paths. And that's another thing, too, that you see in cities. You see these roads. Now, legally, you're allowed to drive a bicycle, ride a bicycle on most roads, but you got to be very careful because of the volume of traffic. And so it discourages bike riding on some of these busy city roads. And now they're putting bike paths everywhere. And these people actually think that by riding their bike, they're saving the planet. And then next thing you know, the number of bike fatalities have gone up 300% in the last 5 or 6 years.
Well, that's true. We have a lot of these in Tucson, and every once in a while you see a bicycle riding in them, but it's still very, very dangerous for the bike rider.
I actually, it was just a few days ago, I'm riding, and I live right in the city of Boston, and there was this a man with a bicycle, and he had a little trailer, and there's a little child in the back with a helmet on. And I said, talk about endangering children. I mean, you're on a busy street. You've got these little bike paths that they created by narrowing the streets, making them even more congested. And then all of a sudden, the bike paths disappear, and you're now back on the road with the Mack trucks and the cars and the SUVs. And then you'll see that when there are fatalities, you'll see these little, what they call ghost bikes. You'll see somebody gets an old bike and they spray paint it white and they put it there as a monument to the poor soul or souls that got clobbered in a car accident. And to me, that would discourage me from riding the bike, but just the opposite. I guess it means we need to be doing more of this or get a fewer cars in the cities. And that's, I think, the game plan is to I think it wasn't an Al Gore's Earth in the Balance. Did he say that the biggest threat is the internal combustion engine?
Well, I guess it keeps changing. Another big threat is hospitals, whose anesthetic gases might contaminate the environment and cause global warming. But people seem to think you put a helmet on and you'll be okay. But if you get hit on your head, you're also probably going to break your neck, and your whole body may be damaged. So it really is extremely dangerous to ride a bicycle in traffic, helmet or no helmet.
Well, it's a false sense of security. My son does mixed martial arts, and he said they stopped wearing the helmets because you're still getting whacked in the head, and it's the whack in the head that causes the concussions, not so much the helmet. Isn't really, the helmet thinks, you, oh, I wear the helmet, I'll be able to absorb the blows, but it doesn't work that way, you know.
Yeah, so especially true with football helmets too. These really great football helmets have not decreased and probably increased concussions because people feel safer and they take more risks.
Like I say, a false sense of security. So what do you think, what is the solution? I know that your organization is active in helping with a solution. What would you recommend to people listening? Okay, we hear all this information, we see what's happening in the schools, but what kind of things can they do to make an impact?
I think that they need to speak the truth at every possible opportunity, and even one voice can be very, very powerful. And we know that from the extreme efforts that the bad guys make to try to silence the smallest dissenting voice. So parents, you know, take an interest in the school curriculum. Teach your children at home. Go to the school board meetings and object to curricula that are damaging to your children. Make sure that your children have the tools to think for themselves. They need to be able to read better and to do their own math, not be destroyed by this Common Core curriculum. Maybe you take your kids out of the public schools altogether.
Well, that's a solution that we used prior to my wife and I having children. We decided to homeschool, and actually we did put two of our children in a Christian school for a couple of years, but we homeschooled, and it's really upsetting. There are lots of people out there that call themselves conservatives and Christians, and they still think that these government schools are salvageable, and I think it's we need to get them out as soon as possible. Grandparents listening to this, your children, if they get there putting their kids in public schools, you have a good chance of losing them, and that's why it's so important.
You need kids out now, and they are not going to change until parents start exiting in droves.
I think that's how you vote with your feet. And today, there's so many resources out there what kind of resources does your organization have? Do you have a YouTube channel?
We have a website, ddponline.org, and most of the lectures at our annual meeting do eventually turn up on the YouTube channel. And we also make recordings available to people who want them. We have a bi-monthly newsletter that's available on request. We have our climate change IQ test that we keep promoting by any means that we can. So far, nobody's actually challenged our answers. They just deplore anybody who dares to question the orthodoxy.
Yes, I actually saw that from that email that you sent out. I tell us a little bit. We got about a minute and a half left, so tell us a little bit about that IQ, climate change IQ test there.
Well, it asks, like, what would happen if we decreased the CO2 in the atmosphere below a certain level, namely all life on Earth would die. Why can't every state duplicate California's clean energy rules? Well, because somebody's got to generate the electricity. Are wildfires increasing? Well, no. We stop hurricanes with, you know, stopping fossil fuels. Well, no, hurricanes have not increased. Answers to a lot of the questions that keep coming up with graphs and references to the literature.
They actually think everything is a result of climate change, whether it be radical Muslims, whether it be squirrels gathering nuts early. I mean, it's just insane. No matter what the problem is, they point to climate change, hurricanes, and then when you look at the stats, they even will blame heavy snowfall and cold weather, you know, on climate change. It's just they've just become so unhinged, and I think that's a good sign, because I think that we're able to turn the tide. And I know years ago I heard Professor Richard Linson gave a presentation, and he said we have two things on our side. He says we have Mother Nature itself, and we have the truth. And I think with that, can you let the listeners where they can find your website?
It's ddponline.org. And the other site they might want is the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons. It has an excellent article by Richard Lindzen in it. It has the classic article by Robinson, Robinson, and Soon about the effects of atmospheric carbon dioxide. And that website is jpands.org for the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons. Or you can also get it from aapsonline.org. That's the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, online.org, aapsonline.org, that would link to the journal.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on, Dr. Jane Orient. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. And until next week, may God richly bless you.
Thank you.